This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
My guest is Steve Safran of the Safran Media Group and the editor and founder of LostRemote.com, where TV finds the future. Steve joins us on the long line from his office in, you're in Boston, right?
No applause necessary.
Plenty of applause. Plenty of applause.
Just outside Boston. Yeah.
There you go. Steve, how you doing?
I'm doing fine. I'm doing fine. Always happy to join the show.
Absolutely. Look forward to it.
Sounds a lot nicer there than it does in coastal New England.
It's beautiful here. We are unseasonably warm, and it's just beautiful. No leaves on the trees. They're all most of them have fallen, but it's still really beautiful.
Happy to join the show.
Now, have you
always happy to talk convergence.
Are you getting some sleep? Because I know you were pretty busy during the elections.
We were. You know, it's a busy, crazy season in the media for the elections. On the other hand, covering elections in Massachusetts is not always that hard. It usually goes one way.
You know, I would say the same about Virginia, but it's getting more difficult. We're turning purple.
Yeah. Well, you know, I absolutely believe most of the country is purple. As a matter of fact, we had our Stephen Worley, one of our Lost Remote guys, was at the CNN blog party. People might have seen
right.
People that were blogging, and he was wearing a purple tie because we believe it's purple country.
Now, today is a big day in the media business because of a little something called the Zune.
Zune. Yes.
Z-U-N-E. Tell folks what that is and why we should care.
Well, Zune is Microsoft iPod is the best two-word explanation for it. Microsoft, never one to avoid the Me Too space. They always seem to come along after everybody does with their own iteration of something. It has come out with a $249.99 version of the iPod. This plays along with their own version of the iTunes Music Store, the Zune Music Store. Does video, does, you know, all the things that an up-to-date iPod does, kind of even looks like one. It's got that round wheel in the front, comes in three different colors, including a hideously ugly brown that reminds me of every refrigerator you saw in the 1970s.
We had one in our house.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure yours looks nicer than the Zune.
Microsoft, they're really the kings of reverse engineering, aren't they?
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, that's always been the knock on them is that, you know, what they did to Netscape and several other companies is they go in, they overtake something, they make it, and not necessarily better, but certainly bigger, and kind of overtake a space and knock out other people. However, in this case, the reviews seem to indicate that they are in no danger of knocking out the iPod, that this is not an iPod killer, that it might not even be an iPod scratcher, that it just isn't a must-have in the way that it seems like every iteration of the iPod is.
And wasn't there some complaints about the iPod batteries, like they would die and you couldn't replace them?
Oh, yeah, they're terrible. I've had three of them now, and it's a headache. I've had to crack open two of mine and replace the batteries. And despite that, people still love the things because they're so easy to use. The whole system works very well. And, you know, I mean, Mac heads especially will put up with an awful lot.
Isn't that the truth? Does the Zune have the battery problem?
We don't know.
We'll has yet to be
together.
Seen.
I mean, we only found out about the iPod problem after probably 6 to 12 months of people having them. You would assume that they learned that lesson along with a few others. The interface itself, apparently, now keep in mind I haven't played with it. I read a bunch of reviews online today. The interface itself is okay. Microsoft is often accused of making the interface on the computers overly complicated. And
yeah.
Again, that was one of the appeals of the iPod is that it's so simple.
Yeah.
And apparently the interface is okay, but, you know, they're trying to control an awful lot. They want to make sure that, you know, what they have, the DRM, digital rights management, and all that means is the music that you pay for, you know, is very heavily controlled. Now, this is true on the iPod, too, but it does seem like DRM is heavily built into the Zune in an interesting way. And I'll have to play with it more before I get back the verdict on that.
Steve Safran is our guest of the Safran Media Group, joining us on the long line from his office near Boston, the editor of LostRemote.com, one of my favorite blogs. And, Steve, I noticed that now that Microsoft has an MP3 player called the Zune, It's sort of, they don't want the downloading music to be called podcasts, obviously.
Isn't that interesting? Yes. There's actually a whole movement in the online world to stop calling it podcasting. And while I understand that, it's cat's out of the bag. You know, after all, you don't need an iPod or an MP3 player of any kind to listen to podcasts or watch podcasts. You can watch them on your computer, eventually be able to watch them on your television. You know, it was a term that kind of took off. But there are people who would prefer that, you know, you call them other things.
Right, right.
Podcast has taken off.
And I think one of the comments on one of your blog posts, a guy said that Microsoft wants to call them the video vidcasts or vidcasting, and other folks call them vodcasting. And I guess what's so exciting is that it is sort of messy. Even the very language we use to talk about what's happening isn't nailed down yet.
It's sloppy. I mean, you know, when people started calling video blogs, and mind you, blog itself is a combination of web and log, and web is short for World Wide Web. So, you know, this is the third short version now. So once they took video blog and called it a vlog, you knew things were getting ugly.
Yeah. Steve Safran is our guest. Phone lines are open, folks, at 977-1070. If you have a comment or a question for the expert of convergence, Steve Safran, give us a call, 977-1070. Steve Safran of the Safran Media Group and LostRemote.com joins us on the long line from his office near Boston. Steve, let's talk about the elections that transpired, the big midterm elections last week. Of course, Virginia was front and center in that whole mess, and they finally decided it.
Who'd they go with?
I think we finally ended up going with Jim Webb, which changed the face of the Senate and is going to demand a lot more bipartisanship, which I think most folks will be happy to see. I'm one of them.
And I'll actually argue, and I realize this is a bit of a stretch, but I'll argue there's a case to be made that the Webb may have changed the balance of power in the Senate. You know, it's because of YouTube, after all, that the infamous macaca video got spread all over the place.
Yep.
I think that the mainstream media picked up on the story and made it as big a story as they did because the video was on YouTube. And given how close the election was there, I think that it certainly made the difference in a few thousand votes. And, you know, I realize it might be a little crazy to say, but I'm in favor of making some crazy statements. And I don't think it's a stretch to say that YouTube conceivably changed the balance of power in the Senate.
And what was so interesting, and I totally agree with you, I think the whole reason we were talking about macaca was because it was on YouTube.
Yes.
And within those first 72 hours, you know, hundreds of thousands, millions of people had seen this just a few seconds of video that changed George Allen's political career.
Yeah. You know, I mean, he instantly went from someone who's being talked about as a potential presidential candidate to, maybe I shouldn't vote for that guy. And, you know, now, gosh, I mean, he's going to be unemployed.
But here's my question. If you and I can sit here and see the effect of YouTube in politics and just as a very profound influence and only growing, and call it YouTube, call it whatever, call it video on the web,
yes.
How is it that so few political candidates took advantage of that? You know, they hire some of the best media minds, we suppose, in the country, and yet we hardly saw any of them doing their own very clever, progressive, out there promotional videos on YouTube.
So little of that, isn't there? I mean, it's really interesting. I think, you know, it's like, you know, I mean, you can say that about media companies. If media companies can't figure out the web, well, how can we expect politicians to? You know, politicians hire these media consultants, and they're used to giving very quantifiable results. If we spend $50,000 in the Charlottesville market, we can expect a 3% bump. You can't get that kind of quantifiable result from the web. It's more kind of a branding thing. It's getting people online. Yeah, you can see a certain number of people have come to the site, but you have it's unproven. You know, it turns out that in the long run, you get more of an interesting metric from it. You certainly get a younger audience. It's something they have to understand. I mean, after all, in 2004, Howard Dean showed the power of the web to raise money. Why are they slow? Wish I knew.
Yeah, hopefully we'll.
My business would be a lot better.
And I guess as we see more young people get involved in politics and get involved in the media side, I would imagine that we're going to see, and it may be a gradual process, we're going to see more the politicians and wannabe politicians take advantage of this, what you and I see as a huge treasure trove of tools on the internet to be taken advantage of.
In Massachusetts, the gentleman who was elected governor, Deval Patrick, had the best website and his own broadband television channel. He went from nobody knew who he was, he pulled 3% in the polls, to winning the Democrat nomination, to winning governor. Now, he ran a heck of a great grassroots campaign, but the fact that he had a tremendously well-organized young person audience certainly had to do with the fact that he took tremendous advantage of the web.
Steve Safran is our guest. Phone lines are open at 977-1070 if you have a comment or a question for Steve. LostRemote.com. Let's talk about a recent blog post that you had up called Podcast Math, a fascinating subject that if anybody involved with the internet talks about, gradually, you know that every conversation will find its way to this subject. And tell folks what you mean by podcast math. And where we are with this, because it really is confusing, and ultimately you point out we really don't know.
Yeah, it's not often that journalists like to write a column to which they admit they don't know the answer, but it's my favorite kind because that's where the internet is right now. We don't know, and what we're talking about here is people will hear all sorts of numbers thrown around podcasting. Rocket Boom is the topic here. Rocket Boom, which people may remember. Kind of making a big splash, claims to have between 300,000 and 350,000 downloads, views a day. That's an astonishing number. That is more than some newscasts on cable channels do. However, that doesn't mean all those people are watching. How do you quantify how many people watch it? When I plug in my iPod in the morning, I download probably 30 podcasts. Nobody has the way of measuring how many of those I actually listen to.
And we don't even know how many people are actually visiting websites. I mean, it still is hard to get a grasp on these metrics because we used to say hits.
Right.
But that doesn't work anymore because a hit could be, you could look at one page and it could record 10 hits.
Yeah. I mean, it's all fuzzy math. The whole point of the article is that everybody should challenge the numbers they hear, especially from the people who own the sites. But then you get these groups like Nielsen Net Ratings, which are trying to come up with a standard for the numbers, and I can tell you as someone who has run a website, those numbers are way off. Everybody's numbers are off. But that's okay, because the Nielsen ratings on TV are notoriously fuzzy, too.
Yeah.
So we have to come to a new metric, and one suggestion was something called engagement. And this is a fascinating idea raised by web legend Robert Scoble, whereby the idea is, the best way to measure the effectiveness of something is, well, did it have a direct effect on my product? For example, if I were on here and I were pitching a download of my software, and all of a sudden I saw people downloading it like crazy, well, that was hugely effective. I can quantify that in a way that, well, if you said, well, it turns out after our interview there were 100,000 downloads, which means nothing to me. Again, not a easily measured metric, but something after a while you can present as a story to advertisers.
It's sort of like trying to figure out, am I in schools, do we hire for school districts, you know, are our teachers being effective? And you have to look at outcomes. You really have to rethink the way you analyze the situation and look at, well, where is this kid in 10 years? You know, what's the graduation rate? What kind of jobs do they get? You have to really take a long view to it.
Absolutely. People are used to the web as having think of the web as having a definitive, quantifiable answer. And the truth of the matter is, when it comes to podcast math, when it comes to streaming media and website math, it's not as definitive as people think.
Steve Safran of TheLostRemote.com. And, of course, the solution there and the recommendation, which you said earlier, is always, always question these numbers. Especially if you're
the media in general, but certainly when we're putting out numbers.
Especially if you're an advertiser, like a local advertiser,
yes,
who's looking at maybe putting a banner ad or putting a little video on a website, you always, always question the numbers that somebody gives you.
Question them. That doesn't mean that they're wrong. It just means go beyond the first, you know, the face of, well, we're doing this many, and ask what that means. You know, what's the story behind that? It may be a very good story, maybe very effective. Local advertising is the most effective online. I mean, I think that the thing that the web has done more than anything is allowed local advertisers who haven't been able to afford to advertise in the local newspaper or on local television, they can't afford to advertise on those local sites. It's just really a matter of digging a little deeper, which is always a good idea in anything you're buying.
Yeah.
And, you know, ask that extra question in terms of, again, what's the engagement, the effectiveness of this ad?
And expand on that idea a little bit, if you could, of the local advertiser being empowered now and vis-a-vis niche markets.
Turns out that in the old days, about 75% of the local market that wanted to advertise couldn't afford to do so. Well, that's amazing. I mean, that's a tremendous untapped resource. I'll go after that, but they couldn't afford television, which is very expensive, and they couldn't afford anything really substantial in the way of space in a newspaper. Well, now, with these niche markets, these small markets, on the website, you can serve all of them. You aren't limited by time or space. So you can have a part of your website devoted just to local restaurants, and all of a sudden, these restaurants that couldn't afford to advertise on your TV station, not only can they advertise on your television station website, more people are going to see them. They're not going to fast forward through the ad. The thing is searchable. You can put as much information as you want about your restaurant. People can click through and make the reservation. It is a huge change in advertising, and it's way more effective for the local advertiser.
And the really smart ones restaurants will get together, say, in a part of town, form their own website with a podcast, with some video to create an online community that brands your whole part of town.
Well, that's the other part that's wonderful about it, is that they don't have to go through a broadcaster. There's no reason why that group of restaurateurs that you're talking about that get together smartly can't start the Charlottesville restaurant channel and have broadband video on there and do 5-minute video tours of their restaurant.
There's
a website called turnhere.com that is all paid videos, and they're great stuff. They're just tours of restaurants, and you think, well, that's just an ad. Well, so what? If I'm thinking about going to that restaurant, I want to see a tour of the place.
Our guest this hour is Steve Safran of the Safran Media Group and LostRemote.com. Steve, we just listened to a whole bunch of commercials here. This is AM radio. And before we go any further, I have to hear your thoughts on that, and I've read them. I've read that you really strongly believe that that is a business model that is doomed.
Yeah, I think that in the music space it is doomed. I don't think it's doomed in the news and information space. I think that we still need news, we need it live, and that it has to be paid for some way, and that when you're listening to something live in real time, people still understand it needs to be paid for through ads. Well, where it's dying is in the music space. I mean, after all, we're out traveling around with our iPods, and we're used to hearing music on demand and the kind of music we want on demand, and that's, you know, that's just not going to last. But local radio stations, what they should be doing is exactly what you're doing, which is providing local programming that people can't get in a million other places, stuff that is meaningful to the audience in that town that they can identify with, that responds to the local audience, that gives them a reason to keep coming back. So the good news, Coy, you're not doomed.
I like the sound of that. Hey, before we talk about Streaming Media West, you had a post about, and lots of folks are talking about what Gannett is doing. They're restructuring their newsrooms. Can you explain that to us?
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, everybody really has to restructure. And Gannett, like everybody else, NBC is going through some of this painful restructuring as well. Gannett is, you know, realizing that they are built for a different time and a different place when, you know, you could afford to have these hundreds of people covering different things. And so what they're trying to do now is having their newspaper newsrooms prioritize local news over national news, which is sort of what I was talking about before. You think about your local paper. Previously, it tried to cover the world, and now they're realizing that the value in local newspapers is, surprise, covering local news. They're going to publish more user-generated content, so you'll be able to send stuff in. They're going to become more 24/7 web-centered news operations, which I'm a big fan of. I think that television stations need to do this, too. you think about, you put all this effort into gathering news, where would you put your efforts? Into something that's on for a half an hour, something that's printed and, you know, and is immediately dated the moment you deliver to someone, or something online that is continuously updated and is always live? And that's what they're doing. I mean, they're taking advantage of the delivery system that the web brings to information and saying, well, look, that's the one that gets people the most timely information, and it's not like it's secondary to the other things that we're doing. It's a priority.
We really are seeing the web become a true priority for local TV, local radio, local newspapers. It's not just a web guy somewhere in the office down the hall. It is the business.
Well, I've said, and I fully believe, that it's only a matter of time before a television station puts all the news that it's gathering throughout the day on the web, and that its half-hour newscast is a summary of the stuff that it has gathered for the web, not the other way around.
Yeah, and we are actually seeing that to a certain degree with a local paper here called The Hook. My good friend Hoss Spencer is the founder and editor of that paper, and he started a blog, and so he can now break news, and you'll see the article a week later in the paper, but it's from the blog. It was broken on the blog, you know, right when they learned about it or when it happened, and he's just recently started putting video on the blog as well.
It's really interesting to me that the most innovation happens at the smaller papers, the smaller TV stations. They're like the ones that, I don't know, if it's because they're more experimental, they're more fun, or they have fewer layers of bureaucracy to go through, but good for The Hook. I mean, we have a roadshow from Lost Remote where we go through lots of examples, and many of them are from smaller communities, and it's not because we're trying to throw them a bone. It's because they're being the most clever.
Yeah, that really is exciting. Tell us about Streaming Media West, a big conference, when it was and what it is.
Oh, it's a party conference, let me tell you. It's a bunch of like-minded geeks like me talking about media on the web. This particular one was late October, early November in San Jose. Streaming Media East, I'll put in a plug for it, is in April in New York City. And what we do is really some of the best minds around the country and me get together and talk about this stuff and where it's all going, where the money is, because people still haven't quite figured that out, the state of the technology for it, and ultimately the big question is, how can we serve the audience best?
Now, you had a number of observations from your participation at Streaming Media West recently, and I'd like to read some to you and just have you flesh them out for us.
Oh, good, because I forget.
You said that, and these are wrong statements, you said that a lot of folks there, and these are folks in the TV business, that still believe their core business is television.
Yeah, stupid. It isn't. It's, you know, they're not in the business of making the particles on your tube shine anymore. They're in the information business. They're in the programming business. You know, people don't watch channels anymore. They watch programs. You know, you they're still trying to make you watch CBS Monday Night or NBC Thursday Night while you're sitting there with your TiVo programming. I want to watch How I Met My Mother, How I Met Your Mother. I want to watch Battlestar Galactica. They should be pushing their programs, not their networks.
Or even in a news fashion, somebody might just, I want to see coverage of this event. I don't want to see the news show. Just show me a story about this event.
People are searching stories. They're not searching news channels. A lot of times, you know, people, you know, I'll say, is your news channel doing well in search? They'll say, yes, when you put in WXXX, we come right up. Like, well, nobody's searching your channel. They're searching, you know, Fire in Charlottesville, something like that, in which case, you know, they come up somewhere in the middle. So you're right. That's exactly right. It's on-demand information. Are they prepared for that?
Another misconception still strong out there is that a lot of people are still thinking that they need to figure out ways to drive people to their website.
It doesn't work that way anymore. People don't go to websites, interestingly enough. They want the information to come to them. What has been the biggest development in the web over recent years is something called RSS. Now, I don't want to freak out people with abbreviations. Interestingly enough, it stands for Really Simple Syndication. And it is really simple. All it means is that the headlines from the sites that you choose go to either your inbox, if you set that up that way, or a page. I have mine set up in Google called Google Reader.
I use Bloglines.
Okay, there you go. There's so many of these services now, and that allows me to get headlines from dozens of websites, and that way I have them all in one place. Then it's up to me if I then want to read that story. And that's going to be the model. Those things are going to get, those headlines are going to get punched out to phones, to wristwatches, wherever. And it's not about saying, well, how can we get people to come to the site? I mean, if you use that information superhighway term, it's not about being an exit off of it. It's about somehow getting it into people's cars while they're still going.
And a lot of folks, we're talking with Steve Safran of LostRemote.com. A lot of folks still think that a lot of people in the media, a lot of very powerful people, still think that their goal is to somehow control this information.
Yeah, good luck to them. You know, I mean, talk about the toothpaste out of the tube. There's a very smart fellow named Jeff Jarvis, and Jarvis's first law is if you don't give people the control, they're going to take it from you. I probably paraphrase that very badly, but it's an excellent point. I mean, you know, you look at what started with Napster, that continued with other music sharing slash stealing sites that are going on, that continued with YouTube. People will take the information if you don't give it to them. You might as well try and work with them. You try and cut deals with YouTube. You offer things like iTunes, downloadable music. People will pay for quality stuff if you make it easy for them. The great appeal about YouTube, the reason it took off, is because all of a sudden people could embed the video right on their page rather than a link to it. It plays right off of your page. Super duper easy. Works on every platform. I'm a Mac guy, and unlike Windows Media, it played real nice with my Mac. You know, you got to give people the control. You can't try and control the media the way that they are used to with television. It's not television.
And I'm surprised that you actually ran into folks at this conference who still believe that video online isn't really going to work, that people won't watch video online.
They think that, you know, what they say is, I mean, isn't that funny? What they say is nobody's going to sit at a computer for a half an hour and watch television. That's true. I mean, the future isn't people sitting in their offices watching television, but they got to think beyond that, because look at what's happening. Apple has come out with a product that is coming out with a product that's going to allow you to stream the video from your computer right to your television. It isn't about watching your computer. Your computer becomes a way to get the information. Starting next year, televisions are coming out with direct broadband hookups. That changes everything. Now you're watching video off the web on your TV. I agree. The best model for watching video is sitting on your couch with a remote. That's not going to change. But it's changing the way you get it, the same way that, you know, the cable box changed the way that you got it from the antenna. People have to realize that it's not about the computer, it's about the web.
And now that folks will be able to sit with their remote in their hand on the couch and tell their television, go to the so-and-so site, and I want to watch this or whatever. And so anybody with a website, anybody with video in Charlottesville, Virginia, could put it on the web, and somebody sitting on their couch watching their television in Seattle watching your video.
Again, and, you know, we get back to your model of the Charlottesville restaurants. All of a sudden, they are broadcasters. And isn't that wonderful? Because, you know, it changes the way you do public relations, too. You don't have to worry about pitching a TV station, getting your guy on for 20 seconds, and, you know, people don't bother with that. All of a sudden, you are the Charlottesville restaurant channel. And you're right. Anybody in Seattle who wants to can watch. Anybody with camcorders can put together programming, edit it on their laptops. You were asking me, the video that I did of our presentation at Streaming Media West, how did I edit that? The answer is, on my Mac with iMovie, the free software that comes with the computer.
It was all with iMovie?
Yeah.
And you can load slides, you can load video, you can do a Ken Burns effect, and just and then just share it, save as kind of thing.
This software, you know, to do something like that, you know, as recently as maybe 5 or 6 years ago, you needed a $50,000 system. Now it's free software. Everybody is a video producer. This changes video in the same way that desktop publishing changed type in the 80s, early 90s.
Yeah, and what's so amazing to me is most people don't, I guess, I don't want to overestimate. I don't want to be one of those people that thinks, oh my gosh, the world is changing. But you know what? The world is changing.
There's no question. You know, it is true that a lot of people still look at it and they go, oh, video editing, I can't, I'm not even going to deal with something like that. I invite people to try it once, and they will see truly how easy it is. There are also sites there's one called MotionBox, and it's amazing to me. You can edit your video online. You plug in your camcorder. It uploads the video. It cuts the segments that you have shot, the scenes that you have shot, into segments. You drag and drop the scenes that you want into order. Bang, instant editing. It's that easy.
Yeah, it really is amazing. Steve, what is it the one thing that you think most people don't get or don't understand about what's happening with media?
Just how much of an explosion it really is, just how much it is changing and how quickly. You know, people are still looking at the web the wrong way. They're still looking at websites as destinations. They're still looking at it in terms of the previous media. How do we put a newspaper online? How do we put a television newscast online? The medium is not the message. This changes everything right up to Marshall McLuhan. It's a way to get information, and it empowers everybody. And I hope everybody recognizes that it puts them in control of how they get the information they want, where they want, and when they want it, and that they should demand, you know, of their local television stations and newspapers nothing less than that very quality.
Steve Safran of the Safran Media Group and LostRemote.com, one of the very best blogs out there. Steve, it's always fascinating and always a pleasure.
Thank you, Coy.
Look forward to doing it again. Take care. Have a great Thanksgiving.
You too.
Steve Safran, this interview will be archived in its entirety on the Charlottesville Podcasting Network at SevillePodcast.com. This is Charlottesville Right Now.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SevillePodcast.com for more.